name is Art Jolly, and I'll be teaching this evening. And just a note of announcement while I still remember. The teacher for next week, actually I'm not certain of the name, but it's one of the nuns from Pavlikavihara. Mm-hmm. Is it Santachitta? Santachitta, maybe? Mm-hmm. Aya Santachitta? One of the Ayas, one of the nuns from there will be coming. They usually have just a really wonderful presence to them. So I highly recommend it. Yeah. So this evening I'll be speaking about right intention. And last week spoke about right view. And so I'll just do a very brief refresher. Probably certainly one central understanding of right view or formulation of right view that the Buddha taught was the Four Noble Truths. We said that an understanding of the Four Noble Truths is to, if you really understand the Four Noble Truths, you really understand right view. And so the Four Noble Truths are that there is dukkha, that there is this unsatisfactoriness, there is this stress that we go through. We want something and we don't get it. We get what we don't want. We have to put up with difficult people. You know, we have, this is part of the most common translation is suffering. So we get this. That the cause of it is craving. Is that we're caught, we're trying to hold on to make things turn out a certain way. Somebody could get the door there, that would be great. Thank you. Then there is the kind of the good news of the Four Noble Truths, or Noble Truths number 3 and 4. The third one is that there is that dukkha ceases. Dukkha ceases. We can pay attention to it and actually know that it does actually come to an end. And the fourth Noble Truth is that there's a way to get there. There's a path we can follow. And the path. The path has basically divides the Noble Eightfold Path is it kind of breaks out into three parts: sila, or ethical conduct; samadhi, or kind of the collecting and unifying of the mind and heart; and panya, or wisdom. These first two factors on the Noble Eightfold Path are in that constitute that wisdom grouping there. And said that we need this just enough. We need to have a little bit of wisdom. We need to have some weariness from the dukkha of our lives, kind of to get us started on the path. But then that comes to fruition later on in the process there. I saw this quote from, I did some reading of Bhikkhu Bodhi's book on the Eightfold, the Noble Eightfold Path, and he has a quote in there: "One who recognizes the law of kamma, kamma being essentially the Pali word for the Sanskrit karma, one who recognizes the law of kamma or karma, that actions bring consequences, will frame their pursuits to accord with this law. Thus, their actions, expressive of their intentions, will conform to the canons of right conduct." In other words, when we start to see more clearly that our actions have consequences, as we start to not just, and I don't mean just seeing it like reading about it or something like that, but we start to get this sense, we feel it, we know it internally, that our actions have consequences, then that becomes kind of the compass point that steers us in the right direction. Yeah. Because of that, we naturally are drawn to acting in ways that don't cause harm for ourselves or others. We see that, we learn this, the feedback loop is there. So let's talk a little bit about intention. Intention was said to be the motivation behind each action, or each action of body, so physical movement, each action of speech, and each action of mind. So even the thoughts are said to have intention behind them, which is kind of interesting to see that. Could be the intention behind a thought can't be fairly small, yeah? These thoughts just kind of seem to arise of their own. As with many things in our lives, though, they're said to arise due to causes and conditions. Certainly for myself, when I am caught in anger about something, the thoughts that I have, they're arising due to causes and conditions, due to habits of mind that I have. Yeah, I certainly can see that. The Buddha said, I don't know if this is an exact quote, but essentially he said that karma, I tell you, is intention. Or is karma is intention. Now, karma or karma translates as action. Technically, the word translates as action. And I believe my understanding is it was used to refer to action in many different traditions, spiritual traditions at the time of the Buddha. But to attach it to intention, to really say that what matters is the intention behind the action, that was specific to the Buddha. That's my understanding. And really, he said that's what he's talking about. That's what he's teaching about. When he's talking about this, the law of karma, he's talking about this intention that our mind state, the volition behind every action that we do is what conditions future actions. Another quote from Bhikkhu Bodhi. Emotional predilections influence views, and views determine predilections. Thus, a penetrating view of the nature of existence, gained through deep reflection and validated through investigation, brings with it a restructuring of values which sets the mind moving towards goals commensurate with the new vision. In other words, kind of just as he was saying earlier, that there is this, as we start to, these views, these opinions, these beliefs, these ideas that we have and hold on to, they can trip us up, yeah? But over time, they can purify themselves through our heartfelt reflection, through looking closely at our actions over time. We can be conscious of these views or not, these views and ideas, and they may serve us well, or they may have served us well at one point, and then at some point they cease to serve us, no longer. Over time, as our mindfulness strengthens, then we can see more clearly what the actions are, what's the intention behind the actions. There's one discourse where the Buddha is talking about actions. And he's talking about how these actions, basically, if it's an action of body that you're about to do, you're going, you know, could be you're about to hit somebody, you're angry and you want to hit somebody. Well, you can reflect before doing the action. Is it going to be a skillful action? Is it an action that is going to cause harm or not going to cause harm? If it's not going to cause harm, then we can continue forward with it. If we've already started the action, we get to reflect on it while we're doing it. You know? And then, if it is an action that it could conceivably be causing harm, we can simply stop doing it right then and there. I'm sure many of you know this experience. You're about to say something, or you started to say something, and you can feel the anger there, and you're justified in this anger, yeah? Because that person, what they did, and then we can catch ourselves in that moment, and we can stop right there. This is possible. You know, and this is a part of the learning curve of the practice of the path. So we do these foolish things. We do things that cause harm to ourselves or cause harm to others. But over time, we can learn to do them less and less. That's the third time when we can reflect, which is after we've done something. That one, if you've missed the first two, you've always got that third time. Okay? there is a big difference between reflecting and guilt, self-judgment. Self-judgment, I'm a bad person. I shouldn't have done that. I shouldn't have done that. Reflection is actually feeling, what is the impact? What was, going back, what was the mind like? What was the mind and heart like when I was saying that? What space was I in there? And can I stop that? You know, next time, what are the cues? We've got this body. This body is such a tremendous resource for us. As we practice, as we do this formal practice in here, we do the walking meditation, all of this to build greater connection with the body, the heart, the mind, so that it can be a resource for us as we head out into our lives. As I just said, that although I don't know that I attribute it to Philip, but he had this on one of his Dharma Wisdom e-teachings, either that or it's one of the 52 weekly email teachings for Dancing with Life. You know, we can use this question for reflection. Does this thought, word, or action that I'm about to do, will it lead to suffering or non-suffering? Does this action that I'm doing right now lead to suffering or non-suffering? Did that action that I did just then, does it lead to suffering or to non-suffering? So we can take some time at the end of the day and just simply reflect back on things. And do that in the evening when you're in bed with your partner, or do some journaling, or talk to a Dharma buddy, whatever it is. As we, you know, as we do in this practice, we look more and more closely at our condition, at our experience, and we see that there is a lot of dukkha. The Buddha was right about that. Anybody have had that insight there? The Buddha was right about that? Well, sometimes people have it, you know, but or they not consciously. You know. And the cause is our own craving. We so desperately want a whole lot of that pleasant, get rid of the unpleasant, and space out during the stuff that's neither pleasant nor unpleasant. I was shopping at Berkeley Bowl a while back, which is a supermarket in East Bay in Berkeley. I'd had a long day. I was tired. I was hungry. It was quite irritable, and the store was crowded. The store was packed, and the aisles were more narrow, and it's just I was irritated. And really, I was really just kind of caught in my dukkha right then, and irritation with other people and the situation that I was in, and it kind of getting cut off by a couple other people as I was going through the market. And I remember that one of my intentions that I've been working with now for, I don't know, a year and a half or something like that, is to be generous and be of service in each moment. And I just reflect on that for a moment, and I was like, oh, I can allow this person to go in front of me. And there was just this complete shift, like this 180 shift in a moment. All of a sudden, it was like this person who, before I was getting irritated because I wanted to go ahead, it was now she had given me this opportunity to let her go ahead. You know, and there was really this feeling in my heart of generosity, not of lording it over her or how much holier I was than her. None of that. That wasn't there. So I get to reflect on that too, yeah? And what that feeling was like. It wasn't a judging of her. It wasn't a judging of myself. It was simply reconnecting with my intention in that moment. So, that is intention, and the best or a very good resource for working with that, if you have some interest in that, I think is in Philip's book, Emotional Chaos to Clarity. I hate that title. Love the book. There's some really great exercises in there. I think one chapter is about intention, and well, actually I think the whole book is about intention, but there's one chapter about kind of connecting, figuring out what what are your values? What is it that really matters to you in the world? And then coming up with intentions based on that. And then how to work with those intentions in your daily life. So you can work with them. He brings that in the chapter on starting your day with clarity. So you can reflect while you're in bed, before you've even gotten out of bed in the morning. What are my intentions? And just reflect on them. Say them quietly to yourself. Reflect on these situations during the day when you might be able to practice these and work with these. This makes a difference, I guarantee it. So that is there in working with intention. Great resource there. You know, if our lives, we don't have a lot of control about what happens in our lives. Yeah? We know that dukkha is going to come. We know that aging is going to come. We know that we'll get sick at times. And we know what's waiting for us at the end, yeah? Right? The big sleep. Big sleep. But we do have some say over how we choose to orient in the moment. What our intentions are to be. So this is a real opportunity that's available to us. Right intention, the second factor on the Noble Eightfold Path, was said to have, there are said to be three right intentions. Classically, there are three that are talked about. The first one is renunciation. Let's hear it for renunciation. So, what do you hear? When you hear renunciation, what do you think?
Giving up
something. Giving up something.
Deprivation.
Deprivation.
Letting go.
Letting go.
Freedom.
Freedom.
Okay.
I don't wanna. Good. I'm glad we had the deprivation and the I don't wanna represented in there. Oftentimes, this is something, renunciation is something that people here in the West have a hard time with. It's hard to relate to that. It certainly doesn't sound very sexy at first blush. You know, there go those Buddhists again. Can't have any fun. But over time, we start to see that this endless chasing of what we want over and over and over only leads us into more and more dukkha. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, desire, the objects of desire, there's nothing morally evil about desire or about the objects of desire. It's not about shoulds. The problem is that it is the attachment to that is one of the roots of dukkha. And we can start in very small ways. Bhikkhu Bodhi again. We ordinarily look only at the surface of things, or only at the surfaces of things, scan them in terms of our immediate interest and wants. Only rarely do we dig into the roots of our involvements or explore their long-range consequences. To set this straight calls for wise consideration, looking into the hidden undertones of our actions, exploring their results, evaluating the worthiness of our goals. In this investigation, our concern must not be with what is pleasant, but with what is true. That sounds kind of odd, huh? Mm-hmm. Yeah. We go after the pleasant so often, and yet that's part of what we come to understand in the path, yeah? Chasing after what's pleasant over and over and over doesn't lead to happiness. That next brownie or the next new car or that next app on our cell phones or next click on the internet, I just don't know that that's really going to do it and bring us that happiness that we want. Doesn't stop us from trying. But over time, naturally, as we are paying closer attention, we get some weariness about that. Yeah? That's something to be celebrated. That is renunciation right there. That is letting go of that. And it can happen in a natural way. We do not want to start with the hardest thing. We do not want to start with giving away our home, all of our worldly possessions, anything like that. Okay. But if you're considering that, let me know. If it's a two-bedroom, one bath, something like that. I was thinking, you know, one of the teachers in our tradition, Noah Levine, he named his group, his sitting group, which he has a number of satellite groups around the U.S. called Against the Stream. Mm-hmm. Because to some extent, this path does go against the stream. We are kind of letting go, to some extent, our infatuation with the next pleasant experience. Gil Fronsdahl, he says that we have a misunderstanding about renunciation. He says that the Pali word and the feel of the renunciation practice are more like, say you are snowbound in a one-room cabin with your family all winter long, and then springtime comes, the snow starts to melt, and you get to go outside. He's like, that's like renunciation. That kind of turns the whole experience on its head, doesn't it? Very different. So, you know, maybe that's something to inquire into. How could that be renunciation? How could that be letting go? How might that be a skillful way of letting go? So just investigating that. The second of the three classical intentions, right, intentions, is goodwill. Goodwill, kindness, loving kindness. This is a translation of the Pali word metta. We want to be happy. You know? Even our most misguided actions motivated to some extent by a desire to be happy. You know, really, if you look at them closely, it always goes back there. Even the harshest things that we did, in some way, at some level, we thought they were going to make us happy. Yeah? We care about our own long-term well-being. So we can wish that goodwill towards ourselves. We can wish kindness towards ourselves. And then, as we start to see this in ourselves, that this is our deepest motivation, isn't that also true for others? Yeah, we can start to see that in others and notice that. This does not mean that we have to be best friends with the people who've caused us the greatest harm in our lives. Those are completely separate things. But it does mean that we can work with casting them out of our heart. We have to do that. Time, I think, as many of you know quite well, our experience of how we hold others can really shift significantly in how we hold ourselves. So that's possible. And for all of us, it's possible in some additional measure that we can do that for ourselves and for others. Even for Philip, if you're listening. Even if he's not listening, it's still true. So even for our strongest teachers, until you have become fully awakened, this is possible for all of us to build this in some measure. The third of the classical right intentions is harmlessness. We wish well for ourselves, and we wish well for others. We don't want to cause harm. This is karuna, this is the practice of compassion. For those who've been misguided, when we know when we've been misguided, can we have compassion for ourselves at that time? It's a practice, we work with that over time. Yeah? And then we also get to work with that with others. So that over time, we see for ourselves that these misguided actions of others, they were in some way motivated by that. But we don't wish these other people harm. we can wish it for him less and less and less. Yeah. Even, you know, it's possible that we can see someone who has gained something due to unskillful actions, due to unwholesome actions, due to cheating or stealing or manipulating or something like that, or we can see that. Doesn't mean we're going to approve of that. But can we hold them with compassion as well? This is part of the practice. So, at its core, this way of being is really a reorientation to living from our intentions rather than based on outcomes, rather than based on our goals, rather than trying to get what we want. So that over time, we're oriented. It doesn't mean that we don't have goals. Goals are a useful part of being human. But our orientation is towards our intention in this moment. How am I acting? Is this action skillful or unskillful? Is it leading towards more suffering for myself and others, or leading away from suffering for myself and others? And we can use that as a litmus test for our actions over time. So why don't we break into small groups, into groups of what do we do? Groups of 3 to 4. And we'll have 10 minutes and have a conversation amongst yourselves. Your understanding of intentions and how you relate to these right intentions and how you relate to intention for yourself and your own life. Okay? I'll ring the bell at the end of 10 minutes. And we also, it's great to use this as an opportunity to be with people who you haven't been with before or don't know well, as opposed to being with the people who you've seen here for a long time. So let's take a little time. A lot of leeway. So someone was asking for additional instruction. You've got a lot of leeway. Let's talk about intention. So you can talk about what you thought of the classically taught 3 right intentions of renunciation or letting go, goodwill, or harmlessness. You can talk about your own intentions that you work with in your daily life, or how you work with intention in your life, how you'd like to. Anything like that?
I'm
Okay, 2 more minutes. 2 more minutes. Back as a group and coming back into silence. Questions, comments, thoughts about intention? What struck you in that conversation? It takes lots of practice. That is the truth.
Gives me a lot of information about where I am, and if what's going on is like kind of maybe I should just wait.
Great.
Wait. Yeah.
Great. Were people able to hear that in the back?
No.
Okay. So just using the body, just how wonderful a resource, how great a resource the body is, and just physical body, the energetic body, the emotional body, whatever's going on, just paying attention to that. If things are all kind of all over the place, then maybe we hold off on doing that thing or saying that thing. Bill?
We recalled Phillips 3 renunciations, mm-hmm. and then things sort of spread out from there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, please.
Wanting to know a little more about the does this action or non-action lead to suffering or non-suffering? And so thinking about the non-action when you, here's the way I think about it, that if, say, for instance, you think that you should be writing or sending more things to your grandson and you don't, and you're thinking, should I do that or should I not do it? Or what is my intention, my deep root? Am I clinging? In other words, there are so many things that come into that, how you're trying to figure it all out. Does that make sense?
Yes, yes. So there's so many different aspects of, like, if you're considering, should I, or you have this idea, should I be sending more things to my grandson or something like that? And just seeing all the different motivations in there.
Right.
So I think really kind of like what Mary was saying earlier, it makes a lot of sense that we pay attention to what's happening in the body. It helps a lot. And we start to tease it apart over time. As Jill was saying, it's a practice. It's a practice that takes a lot of practice.
So going deeper and deeper into what is...
And over time, trust over time that we'll get better at figuring it out. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And... Yeah, just noticing, is there guilt, is there self-judgment? Usually that word should is a pretty good indicator. It's really, you know, when that should comes, you pay attention to that. It could be some judgment there, some idea, some fixed idea that it has to be this way, I have to do this. Mm-hmm. And it have to, should, ought to, supposed to. Those are good ones to pay attention to. Yes. Yeah, now I don't think that's part of intention itself. I think expectations are something different.
They are different. But
yeah. Yeah.
It's sometimes I have a good intention, but then in interacting.
Right. You get caught in the expectation. You get caught in the outcome. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in my experience, we generally don't see our expectations until they don't come true. In general. You know, I have an expectation that I can, that this water that I'm drinking here isn't going to get me sick. And, you know, it probably won't. Hopefully it won't. But, you know, it's like I go to some other country, and it's like I drink the water and I get sick, and then I get really upset at the country or the water. They should do this, they should do that. Well, the water's the water. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
I think also coming back to this idea of the role of the good grandmother, you know, there's an expectation there, or the role of the good, you know, the expectations can get caught up in intentions as well in some way. You know, is my intention to live according to the Dharma, and because that's what we're talking about, the Eightfold Path, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or is my intention to somehow, you know, fulfill a role or look good or gratify my ego?
And that is
how they do, you know.
And that is part of the path. Yeah. What is it? I think it was Chogyam Trungpa who said, "The spiritual life is just one insult after another." And he referred to these kinds of things as manure for enlightenment. That it really is fertilizer there, you know, in that way. So okay, this is our last comment.
I was listening to Tara Brockner's a great talk. I was telling her intention, actually, from this Saturday. So it was awesome. Mm-hmm. And when you started talking about it, I thought, wow, when coincidences happen, I need to pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a lot about what you said, that she said, you know, basically, if you're on the Dharma path, then that is your, and that's your intention, then, you know, that's the strongest intention you can have. And the second one was exactly what you were saying about, just she has such a way of saying that we're all noble beings, and if we come from that, we don't have to worry about shoulds and coulds, and are we good parents or grandparents, because if you just come from that place and allow it, then the things will happen. So I thought that was really good. It's a great talk.
Back into silence, and we'll sit for just a little bit, and we'll do our metta.